Welcome to the Money Mastermind Show. Let's talk money.
And welcome to the Money Mastermind Show. I am your moderator for the evening, Glenn Craig. And let me introduce you to the panel we have for the Money Mastermind Show. We have Tom Drake, Peter Anderson, Miranda Marquette, and Kyle Prevo. And a special guest tonight, we have Larry Ludwig of the site Investor Junkie. Hey, Larry, how's it going?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for joining us here.
No problem.
For today's topic, we're going to discuss something I don't think you see on too many other sites and magazines and such. Are we headed toward a financial apocalypse, and what should we do to prepare? So we just see disaster nowadays all over the TV, right? We got shows like The Walking Dead and whatnot, and we've gone through the Great Recession. There's been natural disasters hitting. I mean, they just seem to keep coming and coming and coming. So naturally, people have been talking about financial apocalypses. Is one coming? You know, what would it take to actually start a financial apocalypse? What are your thoughts, guys?
I think we should start with Larry. My thought.
All right.
Since he's our guest, let him go first.
Sure. Go for it, Larry.
I mean, right now, I think the economy is overheated somewhat. I mean, if you look at the standard measures of investment metrics, if you will, I mean, the tape ratio or PE10 is at pretty much an all-time high. And that doesn't mean necessarily we're going to have an apocalypse, but it doesn't mean necessarily we're going to have any more growth from here. So I'm concerned about that. But I don't, you know, I'm not the type to really predict the future. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the next, 6 months, a year. But right now, my concerns are we may have some sort of correction in the near future.
Do you think a correction would be enough to kind of knock everything into disarray? I mean, would it be such a major correction? Is it possible that people start panicking and you have like everybody running to sell their stocks and such?
I mean, there is some recency bias with that. So, I mean, people are still somewhat jaded from 2008. I mean, if you look at the stats of how many people are not in the stock market or missed the whole opportunity starting in, 2009, that's definitely a concern. But I don't think if there is a decline, I don't think in the end it's going to be, I mean, to me, a 20% decline could happen, but could not. It could just literally coast for the next few years. Who knows?
Yeah, I think people have been naysaying our current economy for a while, but in the same sense, you get so many people saying, look, it just keeps growing. So who's to say it's going to stop growing?
I mean, it is growing at a moderate pace. It's not, obviously, the expectations compared to previous recessions, it's totally not in line with, say, 1980, if you want to do a comparison. Granted, other factors are involved, but still, during 1980, the recession grew. We grew much quicker out of that compared to this one.
Here's a question too. If we're we may not be having a financial collapse or anything, even in the next few years. But are we headed in the right direction? I think most people are probably going to agree that we're not completely headed in the correct direction. I mean, we have a national debt right now of $17.5 trillion. I checked that earlier today, and then we've got between 50 and 100 trillion more in unfunded liabilities for things like Social Security, Medicare, public employee pensions, and the list goes on. So, we've got a lot of issues that we're dealing with here in the U.S.
That doesn't even count all your state municipal debt or whatever your local government is called. Ours is municipal in Canada. But if you add up the state municipal, it looks a whole lot darker than just that federal debt to people.
Yeah, but I mean, but one of the things you have to think about when you start looking at, government debt and everything else, and whether it's going to precipitate a financial apocalypse or a complete economic collapse, is the sustainability of that debt. Every government is going to have some level of debt. And the question is can your country handle that debt to GDP ratio? And that's one of the measures that's often used when looking at, the sustainability of an economy. They're talking about how, when you had at this one point, where Japan's debt to GDP ratio was actually like 200%, and hardly anybody blinks an eye and thinks that Japan is going to collapse anytime soon. However, you look at Greece, and at the height of all the hysteria over Greece, their debt to GDP ratio was something like 160%. And so it was a lower ratio than Japan's, but everybody was freaking out about Greece and worrying about, you know, Greece going into complete collapse. And so I think that's part of the equation you have to look at as well, is how can the country can sustain it. I was looking at, I think, numbers right now. They're saying 100 and right around 101, 102%, I guess, for the United States right now. Mm-hmm. Does that sound about right?
I think that's wrong.
Yeah. So the question then becomes is, can your country handle that? Is that sustainable? Are our levels sustainable as they are? Would they be sustainable if we added a little more debt to the equation? Or are we really getting to a tipping point where it may no longer be sustainable for us?
I mean, the question with Japan related to Japan, are we Japan? I mean, I've seen that in quite a few articles where I think we are. If we may not have a collapse, but we may have slow growth for the next 10 years.
Right.
Now look at Japan, 20 years almost in the making now.
Right.
I mean, it's sad. But
another part of that also is, what are we using to measure growth too? You're going back, what constitutes growth? You know, we have so many different technologies and things coming out that who's to say what the next big thing is going to be and how it opens the economy up?
Robots. I mean, that's really...
I see where you're going with this, Larry. You're always talking about replacing me with your writing robot.
Yes.
But as much as debt and question about growth is out there, and there's a lot of doubt because certainly our growth hasn't been through the roof.
No.
But who's to say what will push growth 1, 5, 10 years from now either?
Well, and I guess the next question is, you know, we've got this idea in our heads that we have to have 5 to 6% growth each year. But where was that growth coming from? You know, we talk about, oh, we have to have this robust economy where we're having 5, 6, 7, 8% growth or whatever. But where was that coming from? When you start looking at, you know, where that was coming from the 1980s forward, where was most of that growth coming from? Where was that economic expansion coming from? It was coming from debt.
Well, yeah, you're saying it's funny money, in other words.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, who's to say that 5 to 6% or 7% or 8% growth is desirable? Maybe we need to scale back our expectations and say, you know, 2 to 3% is okay, especially if that means we as individuals saving more money and using our money more wisely. When we start getting into that upper range, we're talking about situations where the economy is what, 77%, you know, somewhere around there, driven by consumer spending, right?
Yeah.
And most of that consumer spending is coming from where?
Housing?
Yeah, right.
Not now, but well, to your point, I think the problem is related to not only the growth, but the growth of the debt itself. Meaning, if we're growing the debt at the same rate as our GDP, I think that's a good thing. But if right now we're growing our debt faster than GDP, so that's definitely a concern.
And what about, I mean, we mentioned other countries like Greece. How realistic is it if one of those countries really goes bankrupt that it could start some domino effect that will have a big snowball effect on us? I mean, do you think that, I mean, yeah, it's Greece, but you know, how is it, seems to be in the news and everybody seems to be panicking about it.
The contagion.
So can they really knock us out?
Yeah, the contagion. I mean, it's more I think the overall fear there is a contagion than the actual, like you said, GDP of how much they generate per everyone else. It's such a small country and such a small GDP that in reality, yeah. But they're concerned with, will it hit countries outside of Greece, you know, France, for example. I think that's the bigger concern. Will it be contagion?
Yeah, and I think that was one of the big things too is, you know, not just Greece, but, you know, all of the other, I mean, I guess they're calling them pigs. But all the rest of the other countries in there, yeah, on the periphery of the Eurozone. I mean, if enough of them band together and drag down the Eurozone, you know, that is when we have a problem. But I guess one of the other issues we look at, too, is if we're going to start looking at things like on a global basis is, you know, everybody's freaking out, you know, when China slows down to, you know, when China slows down below 8%, everybody starts freaking out, too. Oh, my gosh, you know, yeah. China's got 7% growth. We're all going to die. So, I mean, I think it really depends on, you know, the size of your economy and how important it is to the rest of the world, I guess.
And that paranoia always kind of spreads around, like you said, in Europe with Greece. It was the same year when the U.S. had the troubles in 2008. Here in Canada, our stocks went down, our real estate went down, but we didn't have the same banking issues, but that didn't matter. It's just almost a public opinion on how we invest. And paranoia definitely affects countries, especially nearby.
Which is a good question, Tom. Let me ask you this question, Tom. From your perspective, since you're Canadian, what was the outlook, or how did you guys look at the United States with the issues we had in 2008, 2009? Was the fear that it was going to also occur in Canada, or no?
There was definitely a fear, because the you could see it in the prices. Like our stocks were at lows that I hadn't seen in my investing lifetime.
But it was much more outside of the stock market. There were literally people panicking. You know, you'd see the news, you'd see talk to your friends, and there was really a general fear outside of the stock market. And I think that's really where we're going towards, is the stock market is part of it, the equation, but it's much more of an overall fear that the world is going to end, the stock market's going to crash. Did you see that in your world?
We didn't have a concern for a prolonged enough time where it kept happening in the States. Most things for us was a little blip, like a few months of real estate market down. Where in some states, I believe you guys still have some pretty low real estate. It was a blip for us, so there wasn't really that prolonged amount of time to get that concerned. Like, it was a good buying opportunity, but I don't think it was ever, this is the financial apocalypse.
Yeah, because your real estate still has not had any major issues since 2008.
That's right. It was just a little blip. It was a good chance to upsize to my new house. But really, like, I live in Edmonton, which has had the fastest growth in Canada for real estate. And is that really supportable? Like, at some point, we're due for a correction. Yeah.
I'm seeing all those Canadian real estate shows on HGTV. It makes me wonder.
I know there's some states I could sell my house and go down there and have three houses. So we're certainly have some inflated prices right now.
Yeah.
I think we've all kidded around how we could all just go to Detroit and pretty much buy half the city, right?
Yeah. Question is, do we want to?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't shut up my water, actually. That's the problem.
So maybe not the stock market, but what about like back in 2008 or so, when we had a company like GM that was about to go under? And they're certainly in the news again lately with all their recalls, right? So could a big company like that go down again and cause concern for us to really just knock everything out and cause some sort of financial panic/apocalypse? I mean, we've had evidence of that in the past.
If the government keeps bailing them out, they won't have a problem.
Well, that's to be expected now in the future. Based on 2008, I think now everyone's expecting to be bailed out, even though they say otherwise.
Yeah, and I mean, and part of the issue too is one of the reasons why so many loans were going through prior to the financial crisis anyway is because, even though, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac weren't like technically owned by the government at that time, they were still seen as government-sponsored enterprises. And the assumption was, is if anything happened to those and the loans backed by them, then the government would step in and take care of it. And, you know, and pretty much everybody was proved right. And part of the issue was, you know, they let Lehman Brothers go down, and that precipitated such a huge panic amongst like the Wall Street types that, you know, they felt like they had to go in and stop that from happening in the future. And they had to maintain, you know, this confidence, I guess, and the idea that, you know, whatever happens, the government will bail out. But at one point, do you get to the point where it's too expensive for the government to keep bailing everybody out?
Yeah, I mean, I think at that point, really the next issue will be not company-based, it will be government-based. I think really the bubble people are concerned about is in bonds, government bonds, and not, you know, corporate entities. I think the corporate entities, if anything, are considered the new sovereigns. So it's interesting how I think the next crisis will be in government bonds, not, you know, related to anything corporate.
We've had issues already where states were about to go bankrupt, or cities have had issues. New York has had that problem like back in the 70s, right? We weren't doing it so hot.
Go to hell. That's the saying was. I mean, as Ford once said. So, yeah, it's a concern. I mean, look at Detroit. Detroit is down that same path. I mean, there's definitely some California cities that are in the same path. I mean, it's a concern. Definitely municipalities. There was who was the person who made a prediction about the municipalities about 20% were an issue? Her name escapes me. She was totally incorrect at the time with the guesstimate, you know, the apocalypse with municipal bonds. But I still think we're still not totally out of the water yet with local governments.
Now, do you think we talk about the recession now and how it has some pretty long ranging effects on the regular person, right? And it can feel apocalyptic when a recession hits and you don't have a job and you can't get a new one, right? And your stocks are pretty much going to pot. Recessions have this evil almost connotation. Yep. But in reality, they're just part of the regular market cycle, right? We're supposed to expand. We have a recession. We expand again.
Gets rid of the deadwood.
Yeah, it's supposed to. But it's we seem to have lost the invisible market hand, and it's the government jumps in some spots and decides not to in other parts.
It tries to socialize the losses, it's been said, which I think is totally wrong in my case. I don't think that's the proper way of handling it. But
capitalism.
Yes, it's causing more issues, I think, than the way they're maybe solving a problem in the short term, but long term causes more problems.
Well, I think part of the issue is we freak out about recession so much, and no government, no administration, no Congress, no president, nobody wants to preside over a recession. And so as soon as the hint of a recession comes, everybody tries to artificially shorten it. Yep. And so then you get into these things that actually put off the natural cycle of things, which means you build up, I think, personally, as a non-economist, maybe Glenn can help us out here since he has an economics degree. But as you put this off, as you put off this natural cycle, as Glenn was talking about, you build pressure for something bigger down the road. And, I think, each one we've seen in the last, few decades has just gotten bigger and more devastating.
It's interesting because you don't want to get too political in it, but who's pretty much the one president that everybody seems to talk lovingly about lately and for the past few years, and it's Reagan. And there was a recession during the Reagan years, and that was pretty extreme. And it was pretty much dialed up by the Fed, too, to control prices and inflation and whatnot.
Well, keep in mind, before that, there was massive, not massive, but a decent amount of inflation during the 70s. I mean, it was pretty painful. I mean, I remember that with my parents and the issues they had to tend to during the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember the gas lines and
all, it was all horrible. That stuff. Horrible.
Yeah. But it does seem like current politicians, they don't want it on their dime. Don't have the recession during my tenure.
Have a lot of Band-Aid solutions and push the ball down the road and hope somebody else will take care of it.
Kick the
can down the road.
Yeah.
Question is, with all of these, we can't really know if and when we're going to have that collapse. We have a lot of indicators that say maybe we will, or maybe we're going to have a recession or whatever. But the question is, what do we do to prepare for that, in case something were to happen?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I think we're leading up into talking about here is something like inflation or deflation something that we really need to worry about? Are we going to get to a point sometime soon where, we're really worried about what our currency is worth?
I mean, to be honest, as far as an overall summary or theme, I think you should prepare for both. I mean, really, as silly as it may sound, preparing for one or the other, it could happen either way. I mean, honestly, I mean, ultimately, the Fed designs the economy to be inflationary, but there have been points in times where deflationary has been a temporary concern. So I think you should plan for both. That means have some cash and have other investments to hedge against inflation.
But so I mean, if we're talking like full out apocalypse, like 2% deflation, which is like a huge, huge thing. Like if you have 2% deflation, economist textbooks go crazy. Yep. Like to the average person, that sucks. But like that's not an apocalypse. Like here's what I know about being prepared. In the last 100 years, the stock market survived 2 world wars, 2 atom bombs, a cold war, numerous holy and civil wars, large scale terrorism, and Justin Bieber's short-lived pop career. So, like,
short-lived.
He's done. Wow. He's washed up at 21. He's wrote the biography and everything. Like, it's set.
It's too many.
Will you take him back now?
I'm not trying to compare the two, because that might be an interesting tangent to go down. But basically what I'm saying is that if we're talking apocalypse and those like massive loss of lives, you know, fighting over like where we think we're going after we leave this earth, if those type of things were not enough to shock the system, and through all those things, the U.S. stock markets average 10%. World stock markets are not far behind over the last 100 years. Like, yeah, I see nothing to indicate that it will be radically different. If anything, the forces of globalization, you would guess, would lead to a more peaceful, you know, what happened in Greece was bad, but did it collapse due to the fact that, you know, the rest of the Eurozone sort of kicked in? I don't know. That's just my two cents on the chances of a real apocalypse in sort of a conventional sense.
So we need an Amaro so that we can shore up with you guys. How about that's sarcasm.
There was a high-profile columnist in Canada that wrote about how the U.S. should buy Canada. It came out to like roughly $2 million per person. She added up all her assets, like legitimately wrote a book on this. Added up all our assets and said it made far more sense with the infrastructure that the USA has for the USA to own Canada. It was sort of an interesting debate.
If that ends up being the next Google project.
Yeah, really. Google now owns Canada.
Nation state.
So how about something like something that it's probably touched all of us in some way, shape, or form, a natural disaster. Is that something that we need to truly be concerned about? Is that something that, I mean, we know it could certainly wreck a personal economy. Could that do some real serious damage on an apocalyptic nationwide level or worldwide even?
Well, I mean, you know, I was thinking about that question when you wrote it down, Glenn. I mean, look at our situation we had. We had an issue, you know, Hurricane Sandy, what, now almost 2 years ago. And I mean, New York State at the time, I remember it was pretty bad. You know, there was long lines for gas and we had to do rationing of gas, odd and even, just like the 70s. And I think, you know, that definitely, there was a time where I think it was going to be all out chaos if we were pretty close to it. Fortunately, nothing happened.
You were talking about buying a boat and sailing away.
Yeah, buying a boat and going somewhere. I mean, that's definitely one exit plan. But obviously from Hurricane Sandy, what do? The boat's sunk probably in that case. You know, it's a concern. I mean, definitely you have to be prepared for events such as Hurricane Sandy.
Do you think that's something that could affect an economy long term? I mean, Japan is certainly still reeling.
From Fukushima and all that.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want anything to happen, but I think there's a possibility that certainly something awful could happen that would really hurt us.
I think a natural disaster, no. I mean, something along the lines of a nuclear disaster, maybe, you know, be a terrorist or natural, you know, from some mistake or something like that. I don't know. That's a good question. I think natural, no, we kind of know it's temporary and we'll recover. And it's really localized to a certain geographic area. You know, it's very rare. It's a whole entire country. So
I don't know. On the end here, one of the big talks is of the Yellowstone hotspot. What happens when Yellowstone explodes? That's the big fear here. Oh yeah. All right. You have to live here to understand. But yes, that's the big fear here is how do you prepare when Yellowstone goes and we're all living in an apocalyptic state?
So. Like a Mount St. Helens? Is that what they're saying? I'm not aware of this.
Oh, so look, when you're done with this, go Google Yellowstone caldera. Just go that. It's a super volcano underneath Yellowstone National Park.
All right.
And, you know, personally, I don't think that we have anything to worry about something like that. But it is a concern that many people have in my area.
I mean, is it sort of related to the earth, you know, the big one in California that everyone's been expecting?
Yeah, it would probably be, it'd be on greater par with that because if the Yellowstone caldera really did explode, we're talking like dinosaur size ash, like killed the dinosaur size ash clouds.
Wow.
So there you go.
I think.
So what do you do financially to prepare? That's the question.
So, I mean, I think also one thing with all the recent natural disasters is they're horrible. just horrible. I can't even come up with better words for it. But we have bounced back in some way, shape, or form. So, I mean, the United States and the world itself has shown some resiliency there. So I think it would really have to take something pretty pretty big to kind of knock us out, wouldn't it?
Let's talk more about man-made disasters. What I mean by that is, I mean, you look at scenarios like hyperinflation that Germany had. I mean, usually, I don't know, at least from my standpoint, I know some economists think otherwise or disagree with the statement, but I think for the most part, inflation's man-made. And so what do you do in a situation where you're literally having to bring wheelbarrows, you know, to dinner of all your money? You know, that's a good question, though. I mean, I think those are more the possible scenarios than a natural disaster, which is more temporary. You know, how do you deal with stuff that's by own man's creation?
Well, you buy gold there. That's how. Because Glenn Beck told me in a very loud voice, in an evangelical fashion, that as long as I buy gold, everything will be okay. All and right. I'm sure he didn't get paid to say that. And that's his honest opinion as an obviously qualified person.
Are we talking?
I'm just going to throw that out there.
Are we talking investing as gold as like maybe an inflationary hedge? Or are you talking, you know what, I need to trade something when it hits the fan and I'm going to have bars of it in my basement?
I don't know what you're talking about with this inflationary stuff, Glenn. I'm just saying own gold is the answer to everything.
You heard it here. Gold is gold.
Problems in your relationship, own gold. Like, it'll fix it tomorrow.
Alrighty.
So there's this book by Terry Pratchett called Making Money, right? And so they actually talk about the usefulness of gold and what counts as real value. And he points out, Moist von Lipwig, who is the main character, he points out that on a desert island, gold is useless. But a potato is valuable because you can cut that potato in half and you have a meal. And if you plant that potato, you have more potatoes. So when you're talking about, you know, what happens in the future and where your money is going to go, I mean, how valuable is gold going to be if nobody around you can afford?
Well, it's no different than a dollar bill. I mean, honestly, a dollar bill is worthless. I mean, it's a piece of paper. I mean, what people determine as an exchange of value. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a whole discussion that actually Milton Friedman has a good book on, where there's a country, I forget the name of the country, but there's a country where they use big rocks as a form of monetary exchange. And the bigger the rock, the more the value of the was worth. And, you know, it's something that anything can be a medium of exchange. Gold, you know, people have used, what is it, wigwams? The Indians use. So stuff like that could be used as means to exchange between people. So, I mean, right now, gold has just been around for so long, it's considered a medium of exchange.
Yeah. Well, and you know, to a certain extent, having some portion of your portfolio in gold is probably not a, you know, bad idea, since we do associate it with value. And if you're just talking about an inflationary environment and not an outright, you know, apocalypse, yeah, not an outright apocalypse, then, you know, a little bit of gold as a hedge or some real estate as a hedge, you know, land can't be carted off. And so, you know, hard assets like that can be considered a way to kind of hedge a little bit. But, you know, how far in do you go? I mean, how much of your portfolio should be in those assets?
100%.
I know Warren Buffett had some interesting stuff to say about this, talking about how all the gold in the world can essentially fit into an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Yep. And with that amount of gold, you could basically buy like the top three companies by market capitalization on the S&P 500. And he thought, and I agree with him, that that's sort of crazy. That Larry's totally right. It's no more crazier than a swimming pool full of $1,000 bills purchasing something. But the idea, like, gold has no intrinsic value, but like Exxon owns, you know, X number of assets. Those things or has X number of land. Those things will have value. So like owning companies versus gold, I think, is a little different than cash versus gold.
Well, it's more a matter of what it produces, not what it has. I mean, right. Ultimately, ExxonMobil can create oil to, you know, use for other people. So
or dig it out of the ground, whatever.
Well, yeah. I mean, but potential right. To me, potential oil in the ground is useless. I mean, you look at places like some of the third world countries where they have issues with getting the oil out of the ground. I mean, it's worthless to them.
Yeah, they claim Afghanistan has billions of dollars of, like, semi-precious metals, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, Venezuela being a good example, actually. I mean, they're really suffering as a country, but yet, you know, they have all this gold, oil in their ground, so.
Yeah. So then I guess what can we as normal people do? You know, we're not companies. We can't go out and drill an oil well. You know, what can we, I guess the question becomes, what can we do to prepare for these kinds of situations?
I mean, believe it or not, I think there should be some allocation to gold. I mean, stocks being definitely a good part of it as well. You know, regular inflationary environment, stocks have shown to be a good growth. And, you know, they've fallen along with inflation, where gold has not really been totally in line with it. So what else? I mean, real estate is definitely a good thing to do as well.
So that would be maybe an investing option for you to take in case of a bad event. So how about some other practical advice for just the average person? You know, like, look, something bad happens. It doesn't have to be an apocalypse, because let's face it, you know, the world cracks in half. What are we going to do? Well, we kind of don't know, right? We don't know what's really going to happen. You can't prepare for everything 100%. But I think there are a number of things that we can do just to kind of cover some bases if something bad does happen.
Go ahead.
Like you were saying, Larry, like, you know, to invest a little bit in gold or to invest in some real estate, you know, that's a market hedge there in case something does happen.
Yeah.
Inflationary.
I'm just looking at my notes here. I mean, one of the things that I mentioned as more of an actionable tip or idea that really saved me for Hurricane Sandy, and this is not an investment per se, but it was actually what's called a poor man's generator. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, where you literally put in your car, you have what's called an inverter that converts your DC to AC. And we had power to be able to run our refrigerators and whatnot for, 6-7 days we're out of power. Granted, that's not an investment, you know, you can't invest in that. But it's something that I think as far as actionable, if there was an issue like a Hurricane Sandy or any type of natural or man-made disaster, you know, you definitely had what they call a go bag or get out of the dodge bag. I mean, those type of things definitely are useful. You know, I know Miranda has discussed in the past about food storage, and that's, you know, I think something too that makes sense.
I know after Sandy, I started seeing at Costco, they had these food supply kits.
Yeah.
Where it would have enough dry goods for X amount of days that you could buy, you know, which I'd never seen there before. So obviously it's on a lot of people's minds to store those types of things.
I mean, there's definitely some recency bias with all that stuff too as well. But I mean, to me, it makes sense to have, you know, you could always, it's always the Cub Scout or Boy Scout motto, you know, always be prepared. You know, you're hoping you're not going to use this stuff, but it doesn't hurt to have it.
And I think part of it too is making, I guess, investments in yourself when you're talking about like a recession or job loss or something like that. I mean, you need to kind of make investments in yourself, your education. That doesn't necessarily mean a college degree, but, you know, what are your marketable skills? What can you offer? Can you fall back on something? Do you have an emergency fund that you can draw on? And I think we mentioned briefly earlier, you know, do you have insurance to protect your other assets? Just, you know, just those kinds of basic financial, you know, I mean, it's really getting back to the basics. Or are you ready for something to happen?
I mean, it's obvious most people aren't ready for some sort of financial emergency. I mean, what was the stat I recently read in the news about how many people have, like, 1 in 4 have an emergency fund? Is it that, or is it something even lower than that? It was really low. Where it's a concern. I mean, most people don't have, they're living literally paycheck to paycheck. So it's definitely of a concern. And, you know, you question your neighbors. I mean, it's one of our neighbors. Who's the neighbor that doesn't have the proper emergency fund? I mean, is the one that has the nice BMW? Is that the one that's the culprit? I mean, you laugh though. I mean, we had that during the, you know, 2008, 2009, you know, we had neighbors that definitely had their homes foreclosed on. It was pretty sad. I mean, but you definitely, from your end, I think it's a lesson, at least from your end, to learn from and hopefully make sure you're prepared.
So when you don't even have an emergency fund, you're not going to have cash on hand or any sort of natural disaster, right? I mean, who has?
You don't have an emergency fund, yeah. You don't have cash on hand either.
Right. No, but I mean, that's certainly something that you might want to consider. And I know other people have mentioned this to me, you know, just having X amount of cash in the house at all times. Just in case something happens, you know, electricity goes out, you can't get an ATM. So you need to have cash, you know, so there's another thing that you might want to think about at least.
I mean, the ironic part is based on how much, you know, what currently the Fed rates are, what you're getting with a CD or any type of money market account. You know, people, you know, obviously during the Great Depression, people would literally put their money in, you know, underneath their bed mattress. you're kind of in that same situation again because of the money is literally earning nothing. And in some cases, you know, banks are charging you all these fees. It doesn't make sense even. There's also other stats I've read that how many people do not have, they're not bankable. They do not have bank accounts. And in New York State, it was really a high number. It was like 1 in 8, I believe, do not have bank accounts in New York State.
Yeah, I think it really does come down to, you know, is the worst case scenario going to happen? Probably not. You know, it's probably not, but it doesn't hurt if you're prepared or if it does, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, not putting 100% into gold is silly. I mean, I've been listening to quite a few radio broadcasts, and it was this one financial broadcast that the guy said he had $100,000 in gold in his house. I'm like, well, why? It makes no sense. I mean, have some of it.
What was his address again? Yeah,
I've got a shotgun and some ammo. I'll you know, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, you have obviously, hopefully you're well-armed, yes. But seriously,
that's
not
a good investment.
Yeah, people are running for the hills where they were so panicky about, you know, 2008 that they're really acting purely on emotion and not taking it from a rational, logical approach. And that's, I think, a mistake.
Now, Miranda, you mentioned insurance. What role does insurance play in all this? Well, how should we be covered for all of these different things? Because I think that's one place a lot of people don't think about. They're underinsured many times because it's something that's going to happen so far off, or it's not going to happen to me. You know, and it's just money that they have to spend that they don't necessarily want to spend or they don't have. I mean, what types of insurance should we have in order to be prepared?
I can speak about one example in my case is where I'm speaking from right now. For Hurricane Sandy, I did not have flood insurance for this condo. And I was definitely affected by it dramatically. You know, I finally got it rebuilt, but, you know, I did not have any type of insurance for flood. I mean, definitely, I learned my lesson in that case.
And I really think it, I mean, you know, as we mentioned before, I mean, you could do a whole thing on, you know, asset protection and making sure that, you know, your home is covered for the natural disasters likely to take place in your area. You know, in you know, if you live in the Midwest, you better have tornado coverage, right? And if you live in California, you better have earthquake coverage.
So I think we're kind of winding down here, and what I'd like to do is go around and let's have a final word on everyone on, you know, are we going towards some type of financial apocalypse and what type of preparations we can take? Just some final thoughts. Peter, how about you give us yours?
Sure. Well, if you look at the environment right now, I don't think we're going to have a collapse anytime in the next couple of years or anything like that. But I do think we're headed in the wrong direction in a lot of ways. So I think it's a good idea to prepare not necessarily for the worst case scenario, but prepare for things that are more likely to happen. Prepare for natural disasters that could happen in your area, get out of debt, have an emergency fund, plan ahead with a bug out bag like these guys were talking about. Just plan for the most likely scenarios that are going to be happening in your area. And once you plan for those things, you can start planning for the more unlikely scenarios, like a total collapse. So plan ahead, do what you can as far as getting insurance, getting out of debt, getting some cash on hand and so forth. And then once you've done all that, work on the other things.
And Tom, let's go to you. What's your final word?
Well, Peter took about half my ideas, but I'll add to that. Definitely have things like a will and life insurance, critical illness insurance, disability insurance, have backups of all your documents. Even if the disaster is just as simple as your own house on fire, like, yeah, have that bug out bag and have all your important papers and invest in stocks that will kind of survive recessions a little better, like not necessarily tech stocks, but like Larry was saying, invest in the oil companies and anyone that provides things like food and such, it could go a long way.
And Kyle, what's your final word?
Well, I think we're going in the wrong direction here. You should actually borrow all you can because the end is coming. And the insurance companies will run out of money anyway once all these guys cash in their So just listen to the doomsday. No, obviously. I think it's a pretty far out thing. My one piece of actionable advice as the probably biggest hick on the Mounting Mastermind show is to get a buddy who lives in the country, because to be quite frank, we're in a much better position to weather any storm, be it financial or actual, literally a storm. And we just, as a general rule, are more self-reliant and have more skills in the event of whether you have to be self-reliant vis-a-vis the self or the Great Depression, or just weathering like a flood or a natural disaster of that nature. So get a buddy who lives in the country.
And Miranda, what's your final word?
I think I've said enough this episode, right?
Sum it all up for us.
No, I just think it's really important to, you know, prepare yourself financially and then personally. A lot of the time we neglect to invest in ourselves, you know, learn how to take care of yourself a little bit. I mean, you know, we don't have a huge garden, but, you know, we know how to grow food. I have my fishing tackle. I know how to fish and hunt. And, you know, I mean, that's obviously like a huge extreme situation that I don't think is going to happen. But, you know, being prepared for, you know, whatever, I think is a good idea. Invest in yourself, develop marketable skills to deal with, you know, a recession, a lesser problem. And then, as Peter said, once you've got your basics squared away, you know, start working on, you know, that worst case scenario. You know, what if, you know, everything really does go to hell? You know, who knows?
And Larry, we'll close with you. What's your final word?
Let's see. Be prepared and invest in yourself. I think those are the two summaries I would like to give. In terms of the stock market, you know, I think it's, I mean, we could go on for the next 5 years as far as an up market. We could go sideways for the next 5 years. We could have a, you know, a down cycle. You know, I'm betting on, you know, kind of a down cycle, but in the end, you know, who knows? You never know. Ultimately, you should be diversified as the ultimate safety.
Thank you, Larry. And thank you so much for joining us tonight. I think this has been a lot of fun. It was really fun having you here. Tell our audience, for anybody that doesn't know, a little bit about your site, Investor Junkie, and what's going on over there.
Well, I mean, the site obviously is about investing. So hence the name Investor Junkie. The site is really talking more about some of it's simple topics, but some of it's more advanced topics. And ultimately, it's trying to discuss things, assuming you have your ducks in a row, you're prepared, if you will. So therefore, you know, we talked about subjects that you may not see from a Dave Ramsey or a Susie Orman.
It goes right into a little bit of what we were talking about today.
Yeah.
So thank you. This is a fun episode. I hope the audience enjoys it. Thanks for joining us at the Money Mastermind Show. Make sure you check out our webpage, moneymastermindshow.com. Check out our social sites on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. And we are also on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. And until next week, be good with your money. Good night, guys.
Thanks for joining us on the Money Mastermind Show. Get more information at moneymastermindshow.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube, and follow us on Google+.